Members, I'll call the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration to order. The clerk will note the roll and a quorum is present. Representative Hayden removed the minutes from the February 4th, 2009 meeting. Any discussion on those minutes? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members, our agenda is brief but is important. We're going to be dealing with the permanent house rules. I just want to walk you a little bit through the process of how we arrived where we're at today. Many of these rules changes actually came to us from the good work that the Government Operations Committee has done for the past 2+ years, holding a significant amount of hearings and bringing forward proposals, sometimes conflicting proposals, but proposals forward nonetheless for potential changes to the rules and ways we do business differently. We looked at 83 of these proposals. Over 51 of those recommendations have been implemented or discussed implementing in various forms, but we've had the Government Operations Committee meeting on this issue both during session and in the interim. I've had extensive discussion. I have offered to every member of the House to solicit their ideas and input on this process. Some members have taken me up on that offer, and that is reflected within the rules. I have met with the minority on this issue. We had a meeting with the lead Republican, Representative Gunther, and with the minority leader on the proposed rules. And after we have what I hope is an affirmative vote on these rules in committee today, it will be taken up on the floor tomorrow for discussion. With that, before I go through the items point by point, I just want to call on Representative Pawlowski, who chairs the Government Operations Committee, to have a brief discussion on the work, the good work that your committee has done over the past biennium.
Mr. Chair and members, this actually started in June of 2007 when we contacted NCSL, and we began a discussion of looking at the other 49 states and what the other 49 states were doing with basically time management across the committees, floor, and every activity of the legislature. Once we had met with, and we met with the representative three times during 2007, in 2008, we had three meetings of government operations where she testified before our committee, comparing all of the 49 states to Minnesota. We also had House Research and the Revisor's Office testify at great length as to incidents that had occurred and the amount of work that they do. One of the startling revelations, and it should surprise no one, is we are a part-time legislature. We have a finite amount of time. We allow an infinite amount of input, and the two simply don't work well together. Subsequently, after the three hearings during session, there were five during the interim. We invited every member of the House to participate, Republican and Democratic. We had at least as many members at each of those meetings who were not members of the Government Operations Committee, who were actually members of the Government Operations Committee. The final report, which has been on our website now for the better part of a year, does have a number of recommendations, some of those conflicting, but we wanted to give to the body everything that they possibly could to make a decision on improving the legislative process in Minnesota, and in particular, public input. We took a lot of testimony from the various entities that we call lobbyists, but also represent our constituencies and some rather significant groups in this state on public input. Public input in committee, public input on the floor, public input in conference committee. All of that is reflective in the report in government operations, and some of those are incorporated into this document. So I want to thank all the members that did participate, and I would hope that the rules that we passed today would reflect both public input and an improved time management for the public of the legislative process in the Minnesota House.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. In order to have this discussion, I will move the permanent rules, the amendment to the permanent rules, which is this document that you have before us for discussion. Members, I'll walk through a bit of this for you, and it may be easier for members to follow on along the bill summary as well, as that's where the changes are most easily notified. There are not that many changes, but I'll just walk through them for you here. The first one deals with time and resource management. It is a change, section 1.40 on the publication of bills for the House. This allows for bills to be available electronically, and for our time to start for bills to be available for consideration of the House to be made available electronically. Right now, they have to be printed on paper, and we just update the system. We have the ability to timestamp and get bills available for the public and for ourselves to look at and to deliberate in a faster, more efficient way. And that is the first change. The second change to your packet is on a roll call vote, and this is also for efficiency's sake. It's very hard to have what I would call a double roll call, where the board is open and then another roll call is requested. That would facilitate a voice vote roll call, which is not probably the most efficient way of doing things. So this just kind of cleans up that language to allow us to close the board by voice vote. And I think this would be better for the front desk as well, so that they don't have to be calling all of our names out. Next change before you is following along here on page 9. This would look at an issue of setting some parameters around debate on the floor of the House of Representatives. How this would be done is the Rules Committee would meet, and when we're passing our calendar for the day, we would also have a discussion on how much time bills would take on the floor, or motions or discussion. I believe this will help us be better prepared for the floor. I would assume we'd have discussion on how many potential amendments each side of the aisle would have on particular bills, and would have the opportunity to discuss that and set some guidelines and parameters so that we will know when we start and we'll know when we will end our day. Committees have these sorts of guidelines. They only meet for certain set hours during the day, and I think it would be good and helpful for the public as well to know that we would do the same thing on the floor. The next change is on page 11, and this would save us some time. It's the custom of the House right now that a constitutional amendment cannot be amended onto another constitutional amendment. Then being constitutional amendments alone does not make them germane to one another, so that this would just clarify this in rules that you cannot offer one constitutional amendment to another. The next change is on page 13. Mr. Silberg, I'm just going to walk through all of them, and then we'll come back and discuss. Just because I'm on a roll and I'm almost done. All right. The next change is just amend the list of major finance and revenue bills. The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee potentially could have a few bills come out because they have the constitutionally dedicated fund, but then they also have some accounts, so this just makes sure that they can report more than one bill out. Page 15 is the next change. In working with the Finance Chair and the Chair of the Capital Investment Committee, this is going back to the way recommendations are reported from finance divisions to the Capital Investment Committee. We tried for a couple of years to dictate that it be in bill format. We found it easier to delete that. Some committees like to do it in letter format. However we do it, we will make sure that information, when it's passed from recommendations from divisions to the Capital Investment Committee, will be available to the public and be a public document, however it is, and be available online. The next change is on the top of the page. There was also a change on 15. I'm sorry, I skipped over one, members. This adds further clarification on when bills need to be referred to the Tax Committee. And members can read that sentence for themselves. The next change is on page 16. And it is technical changes to the committee, the State and Local Government Operations Committee, and bills that may need to be referred to them. The next changes are page 18 through 20. They are the changes to the names of the committees and the structure of the committee. And the final change is on page 26. And it updates our conference committee reports and the availability of them online as well. So those are the general changes to the rules. Let's first start with discussion on current rules. I know Representative Solberg does have a question or comment. We will be discussion on the rule changes and then move to amendments. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification.
Yes.
On the constitutional amendment, you said that you could not offer a constitutional amendment to another constitutional amendment. It does say a bill here as well.
That is correct.
So it's more than just that that bill that has constitutional amendment.
That is correct.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you,
Representative Silver. Any other discussion to the proposed rules changes? Representative Sarkis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have some amendments. I'm not sure if they're over at the desk, but I have a question before we move to that on page 9. Obviously, we have an amendment to strike that. I don't know if you want to just have that all incorporated into one conversation so we can save time, being that's what we're all here for now, is to save time. Do you want to do that, or should we?
That's probably the best way to do this,
okay.
Most efficient way to save time and resources. Let's get all the amendments handed out that are available.
I think I have one not related to an amendment on page 15, if we want to start with that one, maybe.
As you're handing out, why don't you do that, Representative
Okay,
Stafford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the top of 15, is the exclusion of fees, charges, exactions, or assessments to be called taxes. And if any of you get the State Legislative Conference magazine, some of you maybe read about the interesting dilemma California is in with their budget, where they have a requirement in their constitution or in statute or wherever that the minority has to participate in tax increases, or a certain percent of the legislature has to pass it. And so what is going on in that state is they are renaming taxes as fees, and they are funding entire divisions of government with fees and naming that, but essentially all it is a tax increase on businesses or on, you know, what a certain community or providers or whatever, and renaming it. And I'm very concerned that the tax committee is going to be bypassed. This was purposely put in the rules where we have dollars coming out of people's pockets and going into government. And there is a little wiggle room where on the bottom of page 14 in the current rules is the word substantial. So if you have a little tiny fee, there is a bit of subjectiveness that the chair of the tax committee can waive on the bill. But to me, this is really opening a semi-truck into essentially allowing committee chairmen of finance committees or bill authors to bypass the tax committee and can point to the rules and say, I don't need to go to the tax committee. And I'm just wondering where that came from and how this is going to work in practicality.
Representative Seifert, this discussion originated between the chair of the tax committee and the chair of the finance committee. I believe I would have a different interpretation than the one you described there as far as what this overall rule, if you read it in its entirety, means. I believe it would more mean that every bill dealing with these issues, fee, charge, assessment, and the like, would not necessarily have to go to the tax committee, but ones that substantial. I think this just further clarifies the piece you were talking about substantial impact, and further clarifies that point in this writing. But I would also like to defer to the chair of the Finance Committee, Representative Carlson, to discuss his conversation on this issue and his input on this issue. Representative Carlson, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you've done a good job of describing that. What, quite frankly, was happening last session, bills that had any fees in them at all, whether they were substantial or not substantial or going through taxes, and was an unnecessary step. So we've had conversations between myself and others with the chair of the tax committee, and that I think final sentence there restricts it enough to make sure that if it is a substantial fee increase that's raising revenue beyond the operation of a given board or commission, that would still go through taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for a practical example, I was speaking to the Township Association this morning, and their taxes on gravel doubled or more than doubled because of the omnibus tax bill last year. If that were to be renamed a gravel fee and were to be coming through the process this year, did they double it again, would that go through the tax committee, or could it potentially just get waived on through local government and maybe some other type of committee that might relate to a transportation and then get thrown into an omnibus bill if it were just to be renamed? That's the concern I have. Is and Representative Solberg, when he was the minority, did a very eloquent job of saying we got to be careful about how these things are named and that they're put in either put in special revenue funds or primarily pay for what they're supposed to pay for. Who is the policeman of that? I mean, is it the chair of the tax committee, or who actually is kind of the keeper of the gate here?
Representative Carlson, to this point.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the minority leader referenced the tax bill, and the tax bill would not be within the jurisdiction of finance. What we're really talking about here would be bills referred from finance and whether they go directly to ways and means or do they go to taxes and then ways and means. If a fee of that magnitude were generated in the finance committee, my interpretation of the rule would be that that would go to the tax committee. But your example was it being taxed in the tax bill, where I assume that it was generated there.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, one of your earlier changes, you talked about not having double roll calls. Can you just explain that or give an example of what you're trying to accomplish or achieve? Are we getting rid of roll call opportunities, or are we just, what? I was just confused.
Sure. I'll give an example. Say that that call of the House has been put on, and the board is open as members are checking in, either pushing their red or green buttons to check in, and say we were going to close the call of the House and instruct the Sergeant of Arms office to bring in absentee members. If somebody were to call a roll call on that roll call, we could be stuck there for minutes, hours, or days calling the names of the members, and it would be very difficult because the very members that we would still need to usher in to push their buttons, their names would be called multiple times, and I believe it would just slow down the process and not really give the public that much more information on a vote total, but it would allow us the opportunity to close the board at that time, and then if folks wanted subsequent roll calls on the board, we'd be able to do it electronically. Mr. Western, did it answer your question?
It does. So in that example, what are we saying? We're just saying we don't need a roll call on closing the board for a roll call?
Yes, Representative Western, that would just be handled on a voice vote, okay. Which could also always be divided and members would stand and sit, so there would still be accountability per individual member, but it would certainly make it more efficient than calling all the names out.
All right, thanks.
Any more discussion on the rules before we move to amendments? Then I will we'll start with the PM-Rule 17, Representative Seifert moves the PM-Rule 17 amendment. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, this is the amendment that would strike the somewhat broadly worded discussion about parameters for floor consideration of a bill. I've been in the legislature for 13 years, both in the minority and in the majority. In my opinion, we have, and it's a fact, we have in the rules right now a tool called moving the previous question. It's been used generally when absolutely necessary at the end of session, generally the last day. And I understand that debate gets long on both sides and arduous and the like, but I look at this amendment as causing more harm than good, because I have members of my caucus who really feel their only opportunity to represent their district is on the House floor. If they don't sit on a committee, let's use an example from last biennium, the Environment Committee. We had an amendment from Representative Scalzi on ducks and minnows. You remember that, Representative Dill? Because you helped participate in that debate at length. Well over 1 hour of debate on one amendment. Most of it from people in the majority, by the way. Representative Dill, Wagenius, Scalzi, Rukavina, others. I sat as a casual observer of the process. and learned a lot, by the way. I don't want to minimize the fact. I didn't go back and get coffee or go to the bathroom. I sat and listened because I don't sit on the Environment Committee. That was an example of a very time-consuming amendment on a very important issue. I have a lot of my members who are not on various committees, but when we all went through freshman orientation, unless you came in a special election, so I'll excuse Gunther from this, but all of us went through the little retreat center and listened to Ed Burdick talk about the power of one member. We have the power to introduce a bill. Every member has the power to debate on the floor. Every member has the power to request a roll call. And every member has the power to offer an amendment to represent their constituents in the best way they feel possible, whether you have a small bonding project or whether you have ducks and minnows or whether you have a problem with speed limits or a difficulty with agriculture or whatever the issue in your district is. And I was in Representative Hayden's district last week listening to some of the issues he may want to debate on the floor on human services. And suddenly the Rules Committee says, you know what, we're only going to allow 2 hours on a bill. We are suddenly turning some legislators into second-class legislators because they didn't get their amendment in to the desk in time. Or maybe they said something in the press that the speaker doesn't like, and you know, I know she doesn't operate that way, but maybe someday a speaker will get elected who's not as fair as she is. And that just might go to the bottom of the pile, and we're going to hit the time limit debate, and sorry, you just can't represent your constituents on an issue. This is a very dangerous precedent-setting amendment to this bill that we are plowing new ground that I don't think we want to go down. I think this will cause us to spend more time on the floor because there are other ways of doing things that, you know, I just don't think that it's going to be conducive to good things. Now, we look back at some of the debate that had happened in the last 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years under both caucuses. There were a lot of amendments offered up by both sides of the aisle that had lengthy debate. How do we decide that Representative Scalzi gets to spend an hour and 12 minutes on ducks and minnows, but if one of my members has something relating to deer hunting, sorry, we're out of time. This is impractical, in my opinion, and maybe we'll never exercise it. I do appreciate the fact it says may, and maybe we'll go through session and never use this. I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning is, other than there are some members who are annoyed by the fact that we spent on maybe a half a dozen bills more than a couple hours, and I understand the concern and the frustration with that, but you're signing up to be in the legislature, not the Boy Scouts, not the local church dinner meeting. We have some very important issues to decide that are going to determine whether people have health care or not, whether they're allowed to drive a certain thing, if they do bad things, how long they go to jail, whether their civil rights are taken away from them. And we're concerned about whether I get to go home and have supper with my kids. Well, you know what? I live 3 hours away from my wife and kids, and I'm frustrated that I don't get to go home and see them every night. And I know there's some members who are using that as a reason for a rule like this. I don't like sitting on the floor for 4 hours to debate this one bill. Well, you know what? Don't run for the legislature then. Because we have some extremely important issues before this legislature. And if we have a bill before the House that impacts my community, I'm going to stand there and I'm going to try to defend my community and my values. So if we have the environment bill up, Representative Anderson has a nuclear plant up in his area. He may have a bill to lift the moratorium, but if we hit the time limit, sorry, Representative Anderson, you're out of luck. Or Representative Mason has one relating to lead shot. And maybe she wants to, I'm kind of hoping actually that gets offered as amendment, but you know, there's all sorts of people that have different ideas, and the tradition in our body has been that deliberation and consideration on the House floor has taken precedent over the conveniences of people running around or doing other things. Now, I understand the frustration people have, and maybe there's some things that we can try to work out on an informal basis. But making this committee, which I sit on, wonderful, but making us the do-all, end-all on whether other colleagues in our body have the ability to offer amendments or to be able to speak on an issue. You know, Representative Olson is no longer a member of the body. I think that's going to save us about 30% right there. I don't mean it just to be funny. I look back at the time frame that was spent on many different bills we've had, and one member can talk a long time, but he had his values and his people and his district represent as well, and I respect that. But this is really something that I am pleading with the longtime members of this committee who have been around a long time, represent Fulberg and Carlson, who in a way have helped train me in on respecting the process of the House. I understand frustrating floor times, and we had the rules of the House took a long time 2 years ago. The Great Lakes Compact took a while. The paint tax bill took a while. And about half of our omnibus bills lasted a long time. But as I said, when we are impacting people's lives, this is the only place that people have, the House floor is the only place that some members have to speak up for their constituents. The only place. Because they don't sit on committees that maybe it didn't work out for them. There weren't enough plots or whatever. But in practicality, if it really is an emergency break situation and you need to send a message, someone can move the previous question. That's a tool in the toolbox that you have. And if you need to exercise it, which you did last year, I have to respect that. But I think this process is going to set up a much worse situation than the previous question, because at least the previous question you could have let Representative Dill give his side on ducks versus minnows, Representative Scalzi give her side, maybe Wagenius and Rukavina, and then I had Heidgerken and McNamara were the two people on my side. It took a long time, and maybe we get, you know, let a few members talk, and then you end up moving the previous question because we have to move on. But to let one amendment like that take over an hour, what happens with the rest of us who may have our issues that we want to bring up, but we don't sit on the Environment Committee? This is a really big deal. And I would remind you that the shoe is on both feet with this particular thing. The control of the House goes back and forth. With the O2 elections, we had 80-some seats, and you had 52. Now we're down in the 40s, and you're up in the 80s. I just don't think you want to go down this road. And I've got members who feel much more strongly about this than I do, and I can tell you it's going to cause more harm than good if we go forward with this thing. So for the sake of sparing us a lot of time, both tomorrow in the rules discussion, but I also think subsequent floor debates, it would be much better to get this out of here. And it is going to cause a major, major problem in moving forward with the session. I understand the inconvenience of some speeches on the floor and of some amendments offered and the like, but it's done on both sides, but it's done for the purpose of representing their constituents, and that's what we're here for. So, Mr. Chair, I'd move the amendment, and I'd ask for roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Discussion on the Seifert Amendment. Representative Pulaski.
Members, in the 8 hearings that we had in government operations over the course of a year and a half, one of the recurrent themes was time management and how well we use the resources given us in Minnesota. 90% of the state legislatures, 90%, have some type of time management on the floor. We are definitely in the minority, and we are behind the times. I'm going to quote one of our testifiers, Patrick McCormick, Director of House Research. Time is the lost commodity at the legislature. Typically, Minnesota has adopted an attitude that leans against listening to how other states work. I would argue that that attitude can be self-defeating. In the testimony we also took, I had requested that when groups came up, they tell us about what happened on the floor when we had unlimited time, particularly for omnibus bills. In almost every case, at least half of the amendments offered were never introduced as a bill, never discussed in committee. We had no idea what these amendments were or how they were going to impact our constituents. This goes both ways. I have no problem with a member standing up and defending their district. That's why we are elected. But I would also like to know what I'm voting on when we are debating a bill or an amendment in committee. And I think recent history argues that we need public input. That input does not happen on the floor. It doesn't happen when you can hurl any amendments or talk forever on the floor. That work should be done in committee. I want to go on and quote Mr. McCormick again. The number of amendments and bill drafts over the last 10 years have grown by 40%. This is a limiting factor in the amount of research we can do. The most egregious example was House File 1812. A total of 187 amendments were prepared, 81 by the reviser. There's no possible way we can comprehend what those amendments do. This work has to be done in committee where there's public input. This amendment starts a process, not, I would argue, of limiting a member defending their district, but of making sure a member understands the vote they're going to take on an amendment or on a bill that impacts their district. Because frankly, this work has to be done in committee, has to be done, I would also argue, in conference committee, where we have public input. Where the first bills introduced in a legislative session aren't the bills, or I shouldn't say introduced, debated, aren't the bills to make corrections and mistakes from the last session. There's no one fix we can do to the problems that both the Republicans and Democrats have gotten us into over the last decade. This is a start, and it is something that we're going to have to do in increments, and in this document, in these rules, we make a number of changes. The next debate is going to be on the joint rules, and there are going to have to be changes in the joint rules to ensure public input so that the public understands and we understand what we're voting on. So I would argue that this stay in the rules, and it stay in the rules because members, the public, and we as elected officials have to understand what we're voting on, and particularly in the fiscal crisis that faces us this legislative session.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a couple things with that. Representative Pawlowski, you've been a good friend, and we've worked on some issues together. And I can tell you, I'm not real interested in what Alabama and Mississippi do in regard to their time management. Minnesota has been a leader in doing things our way, and I think we've been better off for it. That's number one. Number two, we have situations where we have members who are thwarted by committee chairs who do not represent the majority of the body or majority of the public. I'll give you an example you and I worked on about 10 years ago called the Profile of Learning. I was the chief author of the bill. You were the number two author on the bill, Representative Pawlowski. We felt very strongly about what a disaster it was, how much money it wasted, etc. I was in the minority, asked for a hearing. Representative Carlson was chair of education, referred it to the Quality Initiative Subcommittee, which was chaired by representative Matt Intenza at that time, who wasn't real interested in getting rid of the Profile of Learning. Well, needless to say, it didn't go anywhere. We passed that, if you remember right, Representative Pawlowski, on the floor, you and I believe it was 115-15 with a couple people gone, when we were able to educate people about what the problems were, when teachers were able to kind of contact them, because we couldn't get people to the table to testify because you have chairmen who aren't real interested in some issues. Now, the reflection of the will of the body was done on the House floor because that's the only opportunity you and I had to be able to move that through the process and give it to conference committee. And it took us 6 years to get rid of it because we had some problems with the Senate. There's another example of where we'd love to have public input and a vote in the committee, and that's on photo ID. And we're going to offer that probably as a floor amendment, but you're chair of the Government Operations Reform Committee where it's sitting right now. What guarantee do we have that you're going to allow a vote and a hearing on photo ID? you may or may not think it's a good idea as a chairman. We have multiple examples of where we do have bills that are, very, I think, very popular with the public, and we can't get hearings on them. We can't get a fair vote in committee. We can't get people in to testify because you can't testify before a committee if the chairman doesn't have the bill called up on the agenda. So the difficulty we have, you know, with the profile of learning was a six-year process where we essentially were denied committee hearings for, I think, 2 years under your side and a year or two under my side, because we had to do a little convincing of some recalcitrant chairman on both sides. But how does the process work on something like photo ID? We're denied a hearing from a chairman. Maybe it's not you, but someone else. What are we supposed to do? And it could be that way with financing. It could be that way with something else. But remember, the House floor is always the place of last resort for a member to go. And so if we have chairmen who are not, I mean, we could change the rules, perhaps, to say that every bill is guaranteed a hearing and a fair vote. And that might relieve the pressure valve a little bit for some of us. But I can tell you that there's a lot of hearings that folks in my caucus have asked for that we don't have a chance to really have a fair public input process. In regard to the House File 1812, that was the omnibus garbage bill that had every single finance division contained within one document. So if you had an idea, that was about the only vehicle on the floor relating to money or policy that you could get your idea up and get a fair vote on something and try to represent your people or your philosophy. So I understand, you know, the big concern people have about, you know, we're spending a lot of time on the floor. I get that. Frankly, I don't know if I care what other states are doing. You know, I understand the, you know, this state does this and this state does that. You know, North Dakota meets every other year for 35 days. Maybe we should do that. They have a budget surplus. Maybe that's the reason, because the legislature is not in session to spend money. So I'm not convinced by the argument that because North Dakota and Mississippi are doing things a certain way that suddenly, you know, we have to change our process. If anything, I think maybe they need to look at how we do some things. But I am very concerned about how people can get their ideas out there on the floor. If they have a chairman who doesn't want to give them a hearing, if they have an idea that comes from a constituent after bill deadline, which is where when a lot of these amendments come up in omnibus bills, members, is after the bill deadlines are done. They have a constituent who has an idea, and I've had a couple of these pop up where a constituent will say, hey, that's where my EBT card stuff came from, was a constituent idea, 17-year-old kid. Yeah, I could draft the bill and put it in, but after the bill deadline, what good does that do? Too late. So, you know, this is just really something, members, in practicality, how does it work? What are we as the August Rules Committee, we're going to be able to dictate to our members, essentially, here's what you've got to work with. So who are we going to decide who the winners and losers of all this are? Are we going to take every other, you know, a Democrat and Republican gets to have it, one talks a little longer, does that mean the other person's out of luck? Does that mean if you're on the bottom of the pile, your amendment doesn't get considered? Very, very concerning about this committee being able to dictate to the members across the street what they're going to be able to do. And as I said, there's other ways of, you know, doing things, bringing things up, getting consideration, and it's going to take more time. And I would also say in time management, Representative Pawlowski, there were many times where we sat on the floor and we were told, come back in 30 minutes or 55 minutes. Representative Dill was sitting there with us because I don't think you go to caucus half the time. And it'd be an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours later than what we were told. And I understand the difficulty of trying to manage caucuses because I have to do it myself. But the time management's going to have to flow not just on the House floor, but the caucus management, when we convene at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and we're told to be back at 9:45 and it's 11, 95% of the time that has had nothing to do with what my caucus is doing. yet we will bear the brunt of when the journals are brought out. Look, we convened at 9 and we didn't get done until 7 at night. How outrageous. Well, if you're caucusing for 2 hours or 3 hours, that takes some time too. And then we have ducks and minnows and some other amendments that take an hour or two that the majority offers. That, why punish my folks for that? So I'm not going to go on and on, but I for every argument you have to do this, I've got two or three why not to do it. And I think they're pretty good ones.
To this point, Representative
Mr. Chair, members, first of all, Representative Seifert, there is nothing in these rules that would have prevented you or I from offering the OBE amendment. Nothing. The rules that you are looking at would have allowed us to offer it, and still, we could offer it. It's a matter of prioritizing, Representative Seifert, and I think if you have members of both caucuses that wish to do it, it can be offered. If your caucus wishes to do it, prioritize it. You said that we're a leader. We are no longer a leader in the legislative process. We're now in the 10%. 90% of the states have taken the position that the precious resources given to them by the people of the state have to be managed better. And as I said at the beginning, we are a part-time legislature. We have finite time. You cannot put unlimited input into a finite amount of time. And we've displayed that the last few years by what's happened with an array of bills, which we're now trying to correct. My third point is to your photo ID. You may not read what's posted. Tomorrow, I have a hearing on photo ID. It's been posted for the better part of a week. It is the only bill up in government operations tomorrow. I've told Representative Emmer, because he is the lead Republican on the committee, he asked me that this is the bill he wanted to have heard. He will get a hearing. And if he needs the entire hearing time, he has it, Representative. I don't think, in the years we've worked together, I've worked in a partisan way. I would hope I worked in a bipartisan way to make sure that we addressed first the needs of the people of Minnesota. That's why I worked with you on outcome-based education. So I'm going to go back over this one more time so we're clear. There's nothing here that would stop that amendment from being offered. You or I could offer the amendment on OBE. Nothing stops it. Minnesota is not a leader in the legislative process anymore, and it has slipped. I want to restore it. I hope these rules are the beginning of the restoration of public input, public scrutiny, and to ensure that when we have a bill or an amendment on the floor, we at least know what it does, and that the public has had the ability to say, this is either good or bad. And finally, you should have just come over and asked me if I'm going to have a hearing on photo ID. It's going to be tomorrow. And we've got an array of testifiers. In fact, I've got several members of the committee who are being robocalled right now. It's happening almost every 30 seconds. So I don't know what more I can tell you, Representative Seifert, but I respect the process, and I also respect the fact that these are limited resources. And in this fiscal crisis, we need to ensure two things, that we know what we're voting on, and that we respect the people of Minnesota with the very, very limited resources that are now at our disposal.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, before I offer some comments, maybe I could ask you, could you share with me and the committee how you, why this is in here and why how you foresee it being implemented? And just a secondary question to that, to Representative Pawlowski's statements of this wouldn't stop an amendment, how do those two items square if you have a set amount of time that the Rules Committee determined that's run by the majority party, how would that not stop an amendment? But if you could explain, how do you foresee this coming together?
Representative Westrom, to your first question of why this is in here, I think Representative Pawlowski did a better job than I could attempt to readdress why this proposal is in the world discussion. How I foresee this happening, members, is very similar, and I think there's some misinformation that I need to clear up that Representative Seifert stated, that this will give any sort of quote-unquote more power to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee already decides which bills are heard on the House floor. Members who have been on this Rules Committee, we don't talk a lot about it, but the reason we have the meetings is to calendar bills to decide which bills get heard on the floor. So we already have the ultimate power of deciding what gets heard on the floor. This would just put into place some parameters of how long we would take on those bills. I foresee this happening this way, Representative Westrum, and it will take some more work, I believe, by us as legislators, which will help on the time and resource management of the public and, most importantly, I believe, on the staff that we have work for us and work with us in developing our product. I foresee us having Rules Committee meetings not just right before session, but most likely a day before session, where we would work with the minority in deciding and telling which bills will be on the calendar, and then having a conversation with both the majority and the minority of how long we think that would take. And that would include issues of how many amendments do we foresee taking place on these bills. Is this bill a quote-unquote controversial bill that would need more time? And this doesn't break down Democrat versus Republican. I've been on the same side of who I think is a well-orientated member, Representative Seifert, Bob Gunther, on issues that I've been against my own caucus. So this doesn't break down as Democrat versus Republican. Let's get that clear. But I would foresee us having that discussion in Rules Committee and setting time guidelines and parameters. In doing so, I believe we will be a better body, because that makes legislators do their homework, get their facts in order, before we get into the floor and just make stuff up and throw things on the wall. And in these times of limited time and resource, I think that will do us a great service for not just this institution, but for the people of the state of Minnesota. So we would have that discussion in this committee, and I would be as liberal as I can be in making this happen. And Representative Westrum and Representative Seifert, that might be a time where you'd appreciate some liberalism in what we're doing. That's in Western.
Well, Mr. Chair, on the amendment issue, unless the time is up, how do you get an amendment in on the floor? Or is that amendment past the 2 hours in this hypothetical example? The amendment would not be allowed anymore unless the body voted to allow it. Is that
Representative Western, right? That is correct. I believe the same mechanism that we have in the body at the end of the time. And I don't foresee us using stopwatches and cards with numbers on them or any of that. I believe we do this in a more informal way, where we look up at the clock, and it's 1 o'clock right now, and if the bill had, hypothetically, as you stated, 2 hours, when we get to hour 3, we call the previous question. Now, if there is more debate on this bill, we have more options. That motion may not pass, or we can move to lay a bill over. So there are many opportunities to go beyond this if the body decides that it is important to keep going on this issue. That's my question.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for those answers, but, I mean, the effect of this still is the Rules Committee. We can talk about working with the minority. Sure, you might ask us for our opinion, but, Mr. Chair, if the Speaker says this bill needs to get done and I want it done in an hour, and others in your side of the caucus, or your caucus, the DFL want it, they get it. They've got the votes on the committee. We know that. They can shut it down any time they want. To paraphrase or to use Representative Silberg's eloquent words multiple times during rules debates when the DFL was in the minority, you're dragging the minority. I mean, this really is a concerning provision that is going to set a process in place so you can make it look like it's this methodical, thoughtful process, but it really would be concerning to me that you're just going to move something to the Rules Committee in a month or two that you've got the votes, we can all count, and then we can always say it's the Rules Committee that set this time, as if that was some big bipartisan effort that went on in the Rules Committee. I mean, the people that come here often, they know when the Republicans are in control, they got the votes on the Rules Committee. They get to set the agenda. When the Democrats are in control, they set the agenda. So I do think I agree with Representative Seifert. People, we need to think about this because it is doing exactly what Representative Solberg said 4, 5, 6, 8 years ago, different times during rules debate. You're gagging the minority. This is just maybe a newer, fancier way to do it. But I would urge members to vote for this amendment. Let's take this out of here. There is a tool with the previous question. It's been used very sparingly. Representative Solberg, Representative Intenza have often taught, former Representative Intenza, warned the body about not gagging the minority, and that's exactly what this appears to be doing. Sure, it sets it off a different day, but there is nothing in the process that says the minority has any way to offer amendments once that time limit's been set, and it's just a process way to do it. If 90% of the other states like to gag the minority, why would we want to follow them? Sometimes the debate is what informs us on the floor. Sometimes there's reasons. If you run out of time, it's probably not a bad thing for government, or they would have spent another $1 billion. Representative Pawlowski, to some of your comments about we don't want amendments on the floor because people need to be informed about what they're voting on. Let's look at Green Acres and how that all of a sudden came out in the tax bill and made everyone was so informed on it. That's a mess. And that came the last night of session in its conference committee report that a few people knew what they were doing. Life estates. Let's talk about life estates retroactively being affected in 2003. Another same example came in the conference committee report at the end. So this open process that everything's going to come through the process is just a smokescreen. It's not all going to happen that way anyways. It's going to happen that way if the majority wants to make the minority do that, but as long as the majority wants to do it a different way, they're going to get to do it a different way. So I really think, Mr. Chair, we need to take this out, and people need to think about this because at some point it does go both ways. We all know that as the pendulum swings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Pawlowski's intentions here, trying to promote some time management on things. And certainly, our forefathers thought of this on the national level and in the state level when we talked about a citizen legislature. We're supposed to be out there with jobs and businesses so we understand what happens when we pass a law. And what happens to us as a business owner or something like that. So I certainly agree with our forefathers in that thought. The only problem is that we, for many, many years, have constantly chipped away at that. And my concern really is what we are now as, I think, a citizen legislator is a stretch of an imagination. I don't know when we'll turn our back. And Mr. Chairman, you and I agree these amendments get out of hand. And one example of it is when you and I were co-presenting a bill a few years ago, and to a committee, and one of the committee members had 53 amendments to our bill, if you recall that. And we sat there for 10 and a half hours doing a bill. And that was ridiculous. But there were a lot more than just those 53. There were a lot of them hauled down, and some of them hauled down constantly on his bill. So I agree with that it is out of hand and can get out of hand. But we have to have some sort of public input, too. We have to recognize that. And the problem as I read this, it's so broad, and I don't understand how this is going to work. To me, it could mean that we have no amendments, depending on what this committee does. It could mean a lot of things. It could mean the time frames. I think this is far too broad. One of the problems that I foresee happening is as we discuss a bill on the floor, and an amendment is adopted to the bill that makes a significant change to it, and now all of a sudden I start getting emails and calls and everything else because the citizens that I represent as a state representative. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Be we representing people here that can't come up here and testify, number one, in the committees, or number two, when an amendment like that does happen that significantly changes the bill, I'm the only source of input that they have. And so are all the rest of you that are state representatives. The only chance you have. So what happens in the case that does occur? When we have an amendment that significantly changes the bill, and all of a sudden now, we have got to stand up and provide public input into the bill, and now, if we adopt this narrow constraint here, takes away our ability to do that, and the ability, consequently, of our public to have any input on it. So I agree with you, Representative Pulaski. We do need changes. I certainly agree with nobody hates sitting on the floor worse than I do. But to me, I've got too many concerns about this, the language that's put in here. I think we need to take it out.
President Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, as you know, as a freshman, 2007 freshman, I think I'm the only one that represents the class of 2007 here. And many times we don't get up and speak too much. I know I haven't got up and spoken too much on the floor.
Okay.
But sorry.
No worries.
But if you recall during the debate on the smoking ban, you know, I was sitting there listening to the debate going on, and it was a long debate. But I remember while I'm sitting, I do get I got a call on my telephone from a constituent who's the president of the disabled veterans camp in Big Marine Lake. The next minute, I got another call from on my cell phone from the vice president of Big Marine, the disabled veterans camp, and they wanted a waiver of the smoking ban for their indoor canteen. So I got up out of my chair, went back, and had the amendment drawn, written up, and I turned it in, and I got a speaker. Recognized me, and I spoke to the amendment, and several other people spoke to it, and lo and behold, it was passed. And I did not know until we were on the floor that this is what would be a request to amend that smoking ban. And I hope that if this is passed, restricting the time frames, I hope that would not eliminate people that would call you while you're on the floor to please consider an amendment to the bill that you're debating. I support the PM 17 amendment.
That sounds happy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think when we look at this amendment and this particular language in the proposed rules, I think it's not necessarily what would happen this year or this session or next year or under the current your leadership and the speaker's leadership, but let's all just think for a minute. What if Representative Seifert were in charge and this rule was in place?
Oh.
He might not be as fair as you. He might decide, or it could be somebody else that was in charge. Future legislatures, at some point Republicans are going to be in charge again. It might be 2 years, it might be 10 years, who knows? But whether it's Representative Seifert or someone else, they might not be as fair and even-handed as you and the Speaker are. And I think there is potential here for closing debate or limiting the number of amendments. And Representative Pulaski, I appreciate the work you've done. I understand the need for public input, and I would like to have more work done in the committees. But when we're talking about amendments, and you say that there's no way that this could jeopardize an amendment or prevent one from being offered, and it's a matter of prioritizing, what if the amendments that I like, what if I'm the only one that thinks it's a good idea? I should still be able to offer that amendment. I don't speak much on the floor. I rarely offer amendments. That doesn't mean I want to limit my right to do it. I might have an idea that everybody else, that every other single legislator thinks is a bad idea, but I still should have the right to offer that amendment. And if it's at everybody else's bottom of their priority list and it's at the top of mine, it still doesn't mean that I shouldn't be able to do that. I guess I'll leave it at that. I would just encourage everybody to either think positively or negatively about Representative Seifert implementing this rule. and think how you would feel if, you know, somebody else were looking at this and potentially limiting your ability to talk on a particular issue or to offer amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I call on Representative Gill, just a point of to this, and to that point, actually, is when Representative Sackler wasn't a majority, was whip, I believe, there was a rule very similar to this that your side allowed did vote to put within the rules. So I just wanted to remind you of that. Representative Hoppe?
To that point, Mr. Chair, were you happy about that?
Representative Hoppe, I don't think I was here when it happened. Representative Gill.
Well, thank you, Chair Sturgeon. I'm just thinking about what Representative Hoppe said about how his amendments might be. He might be the only person that agrees with them, and I think that's generally accepted in this body. But anyway,
I lob him in there, and he hits him out of the park.
But you know, I'm just listening to this, and I don't think that as a member I have any problem at all with what Representative Magnus said about getting an email and promulgating a amendment and bringing it before the body. Even though they're wrong, Representative Hoppe doing the same. Where I do have a problem is when Representative Magnus, Representative Sturgis had a bill in committee and there were 53 amendments and they were voted on in committee and you took 10 hours to get them done, and then those same 53 showed up on the House floor. And I'll tell you where I'm looking around the room. Representative Carlson and myself serve on taxes, maybe someone else. Taxes tends to be a collecting spot over in taxes for these kinds of amendments, and we'll do 30 or 40 amendments on a bill in taxes, and then we'll go to the House floor on the bill, and there they all are stacked up, and we go back through them again. And that's where I think we lose control of the time management, and they did get a fair vote in the committee, but yet they still show up on the floor, and we go through them one after the other, after the other, after the other. And that certainly has nothing to do with the Republicans, because when I was in the minority, we did exactly the same thing. And frankly, as an entrepreneur and a business person, that's the most frustrating part of this place, is because if, you know, when I was involved in my company, if I ran my board like we ran this place, we would have been broke a lot earlier than we were.
President Dill, your comments remind me of something I think I heard Representative Severson say on the floor last week. Just because we did something in the past doesn't mean we continue to do it all over again. Any further discussion on the Seifert Amendment Number 17? Mr. Solberg.
Maybe we should ask Mr. Dill, since he's been in the legislature, we've been going down really fast. Is that his past experience in bringing it here, too?
All right. Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Sturdick.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Detmer.
Yes.
Representative Dill.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hayden.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Hoppe.
Yes.
Representative Hortman.
No.
Representative Junkie.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Loeffler.
No.
Representative Magnus.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Pawlowski.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Seifert.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Solberg.
No.
Representative Westrum.
Yes.
On a vote of 7 in affirmative, 14 in the negative, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Gunther offers the Rules 18 Amendment. Representative Gunther, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me preface my explanation of this bill by pointing out that my former seatmate, Representative Talis, said that the thing that he liked most about the House, and he said this at town forums, is the fact that the House magnifies the maximum amount of debate about every issue. And everything that we do is very transparent. And it goes through multiple committees as well as the House. And we stress input from everyone. So to get to my amendment, you all heard that I didn't have freshman training. So the people that I looked up to were people like Representative Solberg. I asked him questions. I watched him as the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and I don't think there was a fair chairman. However, I was on the Ways and Means Committee, so I got to see how the budget resolution started. I got to see firsthand and got to debate it. Not everybody was on Ways and Means, though. And I think something that important should have input from everyone. And that's basically my amendment, Mr. Chairman. I think that in order to have everybody that is elected by the same 30-some thousand people, I think that something as important as a budget resolution should be more transparent and brought before the House floor instead of just, as Representative Swiggum said one time, not all done in a smoke-filled room. So that's the reason we have the amendment, and I would appreciate your positive vote. Thank you.
Before I call on Representative Solberg, I think I've found at least one part of the solution to the budget balancing is if we have a nickel every time somebody mentions something Representative Solberg said or did in the past, we would be able to collect some revenue here to help balance this budget just today alone.
Mr. Chairman, that's why I referenced he's one of the people I look up to.
Okay. Another nickel. Representative Solberg.
He wants a quarter from me, too. Well, thank you for your kind comments, and they are not deserved. But without any question, the budget resolution is probably the most difficult thing to put together in a very comprehensive fashion. And there's a couple of ways we can do it. You could have, no budget resolution, which I operated under for years. And to former Representative Swiggum's credit, when he offered an amendment, it was within that particular target always, even though it was an informal target. When the House leadership changed on that, we went to strictly, you had to have it in that target, and you had to make it within that, and it did limit the debate. One of the things that, at least in my tenure of being a chair of the committee, I respect the ability for people to have input. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that not everybody is on that particular committee. But I have tried my very best to get everybody in the legislature the opportunity to have input in a couple of ways. And we're trying to do that again this year as well. We have taken the committee out to the public. 2 years ago, I think we went to four or five as a committee to be able to listen to the public outside of this particular building to get their input in. We also, about 2 years ago and the previous years when I chaired the committee, I met with every one of the divisions, both Republicans and Democrats, early childhood division. I met with the Republicans, met with the Democrats. I met separately because our rules don't allow me to meet in a closed meeting with them together. So there was lots of meetings. But I asked for their input and took it seriously because I think we adopted some of the ideas that came out of there. Obviously, we're not going to adopt every idea, but I wanted to get a sense of where they, both sides of the political aisle, felt our priorities should be in setting the budget resolution. I'll also tell you that every committee, whether it be Republican or Democrat, the committee I met with, that was the highest priority all the time. So you have to have that balancing act. We're going to be doing that again this year if we possibly can. The last time we adopted a budget resolution 2 years ago, we also said I want to present a minority report or another alternative. And we had one hearing where, at that time, Representative Emmer presented his thoughts on ideas. He's done a lot of work. We have House Resolution 1 before the committee. I think Representative Coles has asked a couple of times, and it's only a partial resolution. And you can't have just a partial resolution. You have to have all the pieces fit together. So I understand that there are several ways you can have everyone has some input into it, and I think the way we've been able to try to manage this very, and it's always a difficult choice of setting priorities, but to be able to to manage it within the Ways and Means Committee, I think, is the most open process that we can have. That also allows for people to be able to come and testify. And for anybody else in the legislative process, if they don't serve in that committee, they have a friend that serves on the committee that would be able to offer their amendment and their set their priorities. So I would oppose the amendment.
Captain Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. Representative Fulberg, if you remember right, you were on Ways and Means with me 5 years ago, I guess it was, and we had a budget resolution, and then there was A and B. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
If Racino passed, it was A, and if it didn't pass, it was B. Does this allow for something like that? I saw a few slots and bars bills added here a couple days ago on the introduction of bills, and I know one of the points you made is I don't know that the rules allow for this A and B business, and you know it went forward and whatever happened I don't remember, but does this allow for an A and B possibility if something like that were to happen, because we really don't know early on if bills like that will pass or not pass. Or is your intention or the conscription of the rules as such that you're going to have one resolution and that's it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, I think that it says must adopt a budget resolution and not several budget resolutions and pick from the whichever one you like to have go forward on the House floor. But it does allow the flexibility, if there are additional information later on, to have that budget resolution amended. And that would be, I think, a more proper way to be able to deal with if there are additional revenues or shortfalls or increases or decreases. And we may see that this year with the federal stimulus package coming in. We don't know the timing of that, and we may have to come back and look at an amended resolution. I think under Representative Bishop and Representative Knobloch and myself, we have had budget resolutions amendments at all times because things change a little bit. So I would hope we wouldn't have several different budget resolutions. They become meaningless at that particular time. But the opportunity to have amended resolutions, I think, is more important.
Any further discussion on the Gunther Amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Members, Representative Westrom offers the Rules 20 Amendment. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this amendment would simply just establish that if an amendment is offered that does save money, it's not out of order and it's germane to the bill. Given the deficit we've got, any time an amendment can come forward, be offered to save money, it seems like logical that it should be counted and or allowed to be debated and voted on, and we put the money in the savings in the budget reserve if the amendment would pass.
Discussion of Fulbert.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose it for a couple of reasons. There's nothing in the budget resolutions that have occurred in the past or that will occur in the future that would prevent anybody from reducing an expenditure. If you reduce an expenditure, as I understand it right now, it would fall to the bottom line. What this one would say is, it's a little bit unclear to me, it would go to the state budget reserve, and the budget resolution requires us to set a budget reserve also. So this would say that it's increased in budget reserve automatically, and I don't know how they interplay with each other. There's nothing that says that you can't reduce an expenditure, but it does then fall to the bottom line, and it doesn't have to be spent, and it cannot be spent in another category if you would do that. So I think that what you're trying to accomplish here is already accomplished in the rules, and this may make it more difficult for you to accomplish it if you have a budget resolution of reserve of $650, and the budget resolution says that, and all of a sudden you got another $1 million going into it, it may make your amendment out of order on a technical basis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Colbert, your concern is if it added another $1 million to the 650 in the hypothetical example, the budget resolution would be out of whack because it's only talking about a $650 million budget reserve?
That's over.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I don't know how that would react and play against each other on it, but there's nothing in the current resolution or past ones or future that would prevent anybody from reducing an expenditure. Period.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Representative Solberg, but if you do reduce that expenditure, the money stays in that department area, doesn't go to the budget reserve.
No.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't stay in that area. It would then fall to the bottom line. You don't have to spend all the money that comes up into the target. So that if we don't spend the money, as I understand it, in a particular target, it falls to the bottom line of it's not in the cash flow account, it's not in the reserve, it's just on the bottom line. And we usually end the session with some money on the bottom line.
President Lesher.
No further questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of the Westrom Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on the rules?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I don't believe we have any other amendments to offer, but I would ask members as you go from this committee to the floor to think very carefully about particularly the one change on limitations. Not all chairs are as fair as Representative Pawlowski, and I can tell you right now that we're going to have a situation where a member does not get a bill hearing, and we're going to run up against some kind of artificial deadline, and we're going to have a ruckus on the floor. And if it's something that's set up in the way that it empowers me or Representative Gunther to figure out how many amendments there are, I understand the good intent behind that. But I can also tell you that not every member of my caucus is going to come running to my office and say, I have these amendments to offer. Because, as Representative Detmer said, on the smoking ban, if the disabled veterans camp calls him on the floor during the smoking ban debate and asks for amendments to be drafted, we've always allowed that for people to represent their districts. And so I appreciate the fact that it says may, and maybe we'll never use it. If you remember right, we had those limitations when we first took the majority because of how scared or upset or whatever the leadership was that the minority might, abuse the debate and whatever else. It was never used. Interestingly enough, Majority Leader Pawlenty, it was his idea, and we repealed it 2 years later because it was never used. But I can tell you that, maybe this will never get used, and we can self-police. We can guilt our Representative Pawlowski, we're both Catholic, we're good at guilting. We can guilt our colleagues into trying to control themselves. I don't know how it will work. And I think we got to try to back it up and take a couple examples of how this, maybe would have been applied and figure out what do we do. I mean, the stadium example of Representative Lencheski having a whole boatload of amendments because she wasn't a big fan of the Hennepin sales tax was one. What do you do? I mean, let's try to figure that out. What if this stadium bill were, let's reverse the clock and put this, this rule in place. What would we have done as a rules committee? Would we have told Representative Lencheski, give us your best 12, your best 40, keep it to 3 minutes apiece, even though Representative Krenke was talking as much as she was? I don't know. And I don't know if members of this group know how this is going to work. I don't know what we're going to tell people. And maybe Representative Pawlowski's committee had more input that they could give us an idea of how it works. But we have examples on both sides of the aisle that whether it's ducks and minnows or stadiums or smoking bans or whatever, where it took a long time on both sides. But I think it's important debate, and I think it's important consideration. And to tell someone, sorry, you can only give us so many more amendments, don't think that people aren't going to start shopping them in the hallways. There are always ways to get around these things, and it's going to just cause more of a mess because people are going to be a little more upset if they're told, hey, Representative Hayden can't represent your district because you only get one or two shots. So you're going to come to me, and I'll carry your amendment. Those are the things I think we really got to be concerned about. Maybe we try it with an omnibus bill, and I'm going to plead with the majority. You know, let's see what happens. Maybe we try it without imposing this rule, and we see what happens, and then, you know, you exercise it later. We try some self-constraint and some discipline, and try to lay the club down politely. Rather than using the rules. So I would ask members to not support these rules just on that alone, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, and very quickly, Representative Seifert, I've been here as long as you too, and I do agree with a lot of what you say, and I have no clue what this is going to do. I absolutely none. Now remember, I'm the only chairman without any rules in this place, okay? Keep that in mind. So I don't like rules either. But I will say, and I'll be the first with you if this doesn't work, because I have served in both bodies too. But just to surmise that it's not going to work until we try it, this committee is going to decide how it works. We're the ones that are going to go through the steps. We're the ones that are going to have the discussions. We're the ones that are going to figure this out as we move forward this year. And that's why I have some confidence in it at this point, is because I do have the input, and I'm sitting here in the future with it. So for any of us to surmise what's going to happen, because this is in there, I think it's an incorrect summation right now of this bill and this rule. We need to first give it a shot, and we can do that by putting it in, but I'm with you on taking it out if it doesn't work. If for some reason I can't offer my amendment, or my roommate can't offer his amendment, and you know who he is. And we will be with you changing this or working with this committee to change it as we go forward. But I think the one thing I respect about Representative Pawlowski's words is we are a part-time legislature, and Representative Magnus brought it up too. If we want to go full-time, I have no problem with that either, because I signed up for this job, and then I know exactly what's going on. Pay us as full-time. Keep us here full-time, and we have a lot more time to do stuff. But we're here for 5 months a year, 4 months in the second year, and we do need to have some management on time, so I do agree with Representative Pawlowski on that. Otherwise, let's have the discussion on a full-time legislature, like Wisconsin, our neighbor, does, and others, because we're getting to that population also, and I think that's a good discussion for the future also.
That's from Westrum.
Mr. Chair, just to Representative Junkie's points, It's easy to talk about, well, this committee's going to work it out. Well, you've seen how these votes are going to go, and I'll predict this next vote. Within one, I bet I'll be right. 14-7, it'll pass. Every Democrat will vote yes, every Republican will vote no. So that's how the committee works it out. Well, of course, when you got 14 votes and everybody's in step and in line, you can call it working it out in the committee. To leave it up to the committee is to leave it up to no decision made by the minority, and that potential of not being able to offer the amendment or not foster more discussion and debate is out of our control at that point, and that's the big concern. I don't think it's going to be... There's very few times, but members, remember, that's the reason this House was built. The Capitol was built for debate. To even be flirting with this is wrong, and I would urge members to vote no. Let's take this out, and knowing the outcome of this vote, I just ask you, Mr. Chairman, and members to give this serious reconsideration between now and tomorrow, and I don't think it's needed.
Any further testimony before we get to a vote?
Mr. Chair, one brief time.
I see somebody standing up, but we'll get to you before we get to a vote on the bill. Further testimony? Would you like to identify your name and who you represent for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sean Toll, and I'm the publisher of an online magazine called Checks and Balances. And I'm here today to express my concern for the lack of recognition of online media in Section 2.41 of the proposed permanent rules of the Minnesota House. The section is entitled Media News Reporters, and the definition of what media is, what is news, and what a reporter is all in flux in my mind, and I think in most of the minds of anybody that understands the current state of media today. This is the second time I've sat here, and I'd hoped I would not have needed to do so again. I sat before this August committee when the chair was now Governor Tim Pawlenty, and he was my own state representative. I felt then, as now, we needed to change the attitudes and reflection of reality regarding the House rules concerning online media. We live in a changing world where newspapers are no longer showing up on your doorstep each morning. Instead, you turn on your desktop computer, open your laptop, or access your PDA to read the morning news. Our access to information is no longer marked by what we hear on the radio during drive time or see on the 5 or 6 o'clock evening news. We now live in a 24-hour news cycle, and realistically, it can change on a minute-by-minute basis. People get their news far differently than before. Mr. Chairman, when Chairman Pawlenty attempted to pass rules for access to the floor for online media, I opposed his proposal because he sought to create a two-tier standard for online media and the mainstream media. He brought the matter to the floor and chose to withdraw it rather than stand the criticism of the members of the House minority and the persons in his own caucus. These proposed rules before you today remain silent on the question, and as I understand from my conversation with you, Mr. Chairman, there will be a different interpretation of the section and a different implementation. I'm here today to seek assurances that online media will be afforded the same rights and privileges as mainstream media. I envision a day in the not-too-distant future when one of our statewide newspapers makes the decision to become strictly an online resource. And I ask this committee, if that happens, will you deny the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press access to the floor? The changing nature of media means it's hard to distinguish one type of media from the other. Public radio takes pictures and records videos during press conferences and other media events for their website. The Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press does the same, and each of those publications have a blog in which their reporters contribute to, which is not as well edited as their newspapers, and having errors in editing, grammar, and syntax is something I'm quite familiar with. I do not accuse this body of abridging the First Amendment, but I will say they have not fully embraced it either. I may sit here at the table alone, but it's not strictly a parochial issue for me in my publication Checks and Balances, but rather it's an opportunity for our state to once again show its openness and willingness to support the Fourth Estate. I will argue that this recognition is late in coming and is one the legislature has not dealt with in the past. And when the new media of the day was television, there was a pushback from the print media and the politicians because there was a bias towards written words as a better form of journalism. And this happened in the 50s. Well, now the debate still exists today. Even if one agrees that the written word is more has more depth than the visual medium has greater impact. I think I'll surmise by saying I think the role of the media today was best stated as by Peter Finley Dunn, renowned quote about newspapers is what he said it, but it's an old quote, and we usually paraphrase the ending, but his quote is, "The newspaper does everything for us. It runs the police force, the banks, controls the legislature, baptizes the young, marries the foolish, comforts the afflicted, afflicts the comfortable, buries the dead, and roasts him afterward." Some may argue the quality of online media, and I say that you should have access for online resources on the floor of the House. And I have proposed in the past some changes to the rules to this effect, and basically it's a three-word insertion. In Section 2.41, looking at it, if you inserted online media resources before or after the comma following press association, and then in turn inserted it in online media resources after television stations in the second graph, it seems like it would resolve the issue.
Any further testimony? Thank you, Mr. Cole. Representative Pelosi.
Members, there's been some discussion about the language on time management. Of all of the different methods that we looked at, the language in these rules is perhaps the most flexible. There are states that divide by percentage, majority and minority. You don't see that here. There are states that will literally say when a bill comes to the House floor and one amendment is offered, whether that amendment goes on or not, that bill goes back to committee for more public scrutiny. You don't see that here. There are two things that we haven't talked about because it doesn't technically deal with the rules. The Speaker has issued a memo to all chairs about recommendations from the Government Operations Committee on how the committee should operate this session, incorporating a great deal of the recommendations from Government Ops. That is one thing that we didn't talk about in this committee yet exists. Secondly, there have been workshops for the chairs and vice chairs. There have been two workshops dealing, again, with a lot of the recommendations from Government Operations. Finally, I want to say about no rules. Representative Junkie has said his is the only committee. My committee has never had rules over the time I've chaired. I'm the only chair that has never sent out an email stating I don't have rules. So just to clarify that last point.
All right. Any further discussion on the permanent rules? Hearing none, a roll call was requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Sirdick.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Detmer.
No.
Representative Dill. Representative Gunter. Representative Hayden.
Aye.
Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Poppy.
Nope.
Representative Junkie.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Blossler.
Aye.
Representative Magnus.
No.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Pawlowski.
Aye.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Seifert.
No.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Solberg.
Aye.
Representative Westrom.
No.
Yeah.
He was off
by
more
than
one. Bill.
On a vote of 13 in the affirmative and 6 in the negative, and you can blame Representative Gunther on that one, Representative Westrum. The rules are adopted. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.